Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for January 20th, 2012.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
Priests of macaques are very despotic. They're very obsessed with hierarchy.
Neurons have to become specialized in order to process one particular type of sound. So you can't easily do both things at the same time within the same neuron.
Dogs have been selected for surviving in a human-dominated environment.
We can see the effects of weightlessness on a complex biological organism without needing to use a rocket, if you like, to go into space and actually go into real weightlessness.
This week, levitating flies, what dogs and babies have in common, creating kinder, gentler monkeys, and a fish that mimics an octopus that mimics another fish. But first, Suzanne Bard has surprising news about the brains of bats.
Humans tend to use the left side of their brains to process speech sounds and the right side to process music. Now, researchers have found that bats also process sounds differently on the right and the left. Bats use echolocation to navigate in the dark, but they're social animals and they communicate using calls like this one, which has been slowed down so it's within the range of human hearing. Georgetown University neuroscientist Jag Kanwal recorded the activity of single neurons in the bats' brains as they listened to both types of sounds.
We find that neurons on the right respond better to echolocation sounds than they respond to the communication sounds.
He says neurons are specialized for processing just one type of sound.
So you can't easily do both things at the same time within the same neuron.
But by using both sides of the brain, bats and humans can process two types of sound at the same time. Kanwal says that his team is beginning to decipher the bat's calls. For instance, when a bat is being aggressive towards another bat, it might use this call. He adds that bats are often feared or misunderstood, but they make up one-fifth of all mammal species, and much can be learned about how our own brains work by studying them.
Thanks, Suzanne. Next, our guest reporter, Amy Barnfind, has news about dogs.
Many people treat their dogs like members of the family. Now there's evidence that through thousands of years of cohabitation with us, they've developed some of the same social skills as human infants. Behavioral biologist Adam Miklosi and his colleagues at Utvish University in Hungary outfitted dogs with eye-tracking devices. Then they had the canines watch videos of people turning their heads to look at objects to their right or to their left. They found that the dogs only followed the direction of the movement with their eyes if the people in the videos greeted them verbally and made eye contact first. But if the people looked down and spoke in a neutral tone of voice, the dogs ignored the movement.
Dogs followed the action of the human only if this was preceded by this communicative interaction.
He says human infants do the same thing, and the study highlights the importance of communication in the relationship between humans and dogs.
Dogs have been selected for surviving in a human-dominated environment or living together with humans. So basically in the last 15,000 years, what has happened with the dog was sort of a change that makes the dog able to live in a human environment, sharing this social relationship.
Thanks, Amy. NASA plans to one day send astronauts to space for extended missions that could last years. But before that, they need to know the long-term effects of weightlessness on the body. In our next story, correspondent Justin Warner tells us how fruit flies trapped in powerful magnetic fields may help scientists learn more.
Simulating weightlessness is expensive and logistically challenging, involving, for example, sending volunteers on zero-G flights or having them lie in bed for weeks on end. Now, scientists at the University of Nottingham in England have developed an alternative. Research fellow Richard Hill and his colleagues simulate weightlessness in fruit flies by suspending them in a powerful magnetic field.
The advantage is that we can do these experiments on the ground, so we can see the effects of weightlessness on a complex biological organism without needing to use a rocket, if you like, to go into space and actually go into real weightlessness.
The technique works by tapping into weak repellent magnetic forces called diamagnetic forces produced by the fly's body. Our bodies are diamagnetic too.
So if you were to, for example, take a refrigerator magnet and hold it up to your finger, there is actually a little bit of a repulsive force between your finger and that magnet. But that force is so weak that you wouldn't ordinarily notice it. But if we have a very strong magnetic field, in this case, of the order of about 15 or 16 Tesla. That's about 350,000 times as strong as the Earth's magnetic field. Then we can arrange things so that the diamagnetic force is strong enough to balance the force of gravity on a biological organism. So in the magnetic field, the biological organism will levitate.
Of course, with a field that strong, you have to make sure the effects you observe come from the simulated weightlessness and not from the magnetic field itself. Fortunately, Hill says it's actually the gradient of the magnetic field that works against gravity, and that gradient varies within their device.
And in the center of the field, right where the field is a maximum, there is no field gradient. So at this point, the flies are feeling a strong magnetic field, but they are in normal gravity.
Hill's team found that weightless flies in the magnetic field behaved very much like flies do on space flights, specifically by moving their legs faster. But flies under the influence of gravity within the field didn't behave that way. Replicating those experiments suggests the technique creates a decent simulation of weightlessness, and although it may be too crude to draw final conclusions from, it could help researchers choose and refine zero-gravity experiments before trying them out in orbit.
Thanks, Justin. The hormone oxytocin promotes feelings of love, attachment, and empathy. It's been studied often in humans and amorous animals like prairie voles. Now, Duke University neurobiologist Michael Platt and his colleagues have tried it on rhesus macaque monkeys, a much less cuddly species.
Rhesus macaques are very despotic. They're very obsessed with hierarchy. They don't form pair bonds between males and females to raise offspring. So there are a number of different features of social organization that are very different between humans and rhesus macaques.
Still, Platt's team found that inhaling oxytocin made the monkeys nicer. For example, they were more likely to help others get a treat. Platt says their animal model could help researchers study the long-term effects of oxytocin therapy, which is being explored as a possible treatment for autism. The animal kingdom has many mimics, creatures that protect themselves from predators by resembling another species that's dangerous or toxic. But in this week's final story, Suzanne tells us about a most unusual case, a mimic that copies another mimic.
To avoid predators, the mimic octopus of Indonesia contorts its body and adjusts its swimming patterns to resemble a sea snake or one of several toxic fish. Now, ichthyologist Luis Rocha of the California Academy of Sciences and his colleagues have discovered that a small, timid fish called the jawfish actually mimics the mimic octopus.
The jawfish is not mimicking anything that is mimicked by the octopus. So the jawfish is not mimicking the lionfish, for example, or a sea snake. It's mimicking the actual mimic.
He says the jawfish rarely ventures out of its burrow alone, but it will swim in the open with a mimic octopus, blending into its tentacles while the octopus itself puts up its own false front. Rocha says it's the first known fish in the sea to mimic a skilled imposter rather than a genuinely dangerous species. And in other fish news, University of Oregon researchers report that the first fish-like creatures to climb onto land lived in flooded forests rather than arid pools, as was thought. They likely developed their limbs, negotiating water choked with roots and fallen branches.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, that's our show for this week. Next week, the importance of naps for toddlers. And does an expensive Stradivarius violin really sound better than a modern violin? Until then, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, we'll send you a Science Update mug. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.